Jackanoid Paralope is a mission-driven media company. Check out more of our podcasts at jackanoidparalope.com. Jackanoid Paralope!
The essential role of the artist is to be able to see what's unseen.
The role of the artist can vary, but principally I think it's about cultivating the imaginary.
Being a creative puts you back in touch with what it means to be a human. And there's so much in the world right now that kind of seeks to strip us of our humanity.
Welcome to Artist Led. From Jackanoid Paralope, I'm your host, Nathaniel Cresson. This show is about, you guessed it, artists. Artists who have decided to focus beyond the proverbial studio to lead efforts around systems change and community well-being. If we think about the role of the artist, like we just heard, these are folks who articulate what doesn't exist yet and help connect us to our shared humanity. From poetry to music to paintings, the act of creation is both personal expression as well as listening to the world around them, harnessing core truths to the best of their ability and translating them so that others might hear and see themselves reflected. Some of the artists we'll hear from are working within communities as guides on the ground, helping surface what those communities value, distilling and translating what they hear, and helping drive transformation forward. Others are working more systemically, examining the larger ecosystem of community development investment. This is capital, aka money, that goes into neighborhoods and communities that traditionally don't have access to it. We're talking about trillions of dollars in this sector, trillions with a T, that's seeking to do good. And yet, the problems facing these communities persist. The artists and community leaders in this show are seeking to identify and uplift new models for how capital can prove more effective, both on behalf of communities, as well as those with means who are seeking to make a difference.
If you stay at the ground level, at the level of communities building the best models for themselves, and you just sort of listen for all the ways in which there are invitations for you to participate or contribute, or for people to contribute to something maybe that you're endeavoring, there's a lot of imagination and a lot of hope there.
This is Penelope Douglas, the founder of Culture Bank, an initiative that's reimagining how artists can help communities and investors think differently about how resources flow.
What originally drew me to this was a deep sense of frustration after a long time period as the CEO of a community development finance institution, a CDFI. The frustration was regarding how it appeared to me then, as it appears to me now, that, you know, trillions of dollars, literally, of very well-intentioned capital were moving into community development investment. And yet the system, to me, had continued to keep capital from doing its best work. The arrangement we have clearly creates the wrong effect. It creates an unintended effect. It's either that, or it's that they're the powerful forces that continue to want to marginalize a large portion of our neighbors and communities is continuing to keep marginalizing them. As someone who is also an artist, I had the great good fortune of being given some space and time to think about this question through two residencies about 8 years ago, almost 10 years ago now. One of those residencies was the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco Community Development Division, and the other at an art and culture center. And I had a chance to really think carefully about the question, and I just decided to turn the lens of an artist onto the question and look at it from an artist's perspective.
Penelope's work has taken her from one Federal Reserve Bank to another. In 2024, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York published research showing how neighborhoods experiencing high rates of poverty are also experiencing overlapping vulnerabilities. Those vulnerabilities include food scarcity, housing insecurity, poor health outcomes, and susceptibility to extreme weather. An initiative grew out of that research called Making Missing Markets. The initiative began with the Federal Reserve Bank of New York inviting outside thinkers and practitioners from across sectors to share their insights and experiences, and has since grown into a constellation of these design teams that are just plugging away, each at their own specific focus. Penelope Douglas from Culture Bank runs one of these design teams. Her core question, her team's core question, is how artists, who see the world differently through creativity and possibility, how can they help lead and design innovative investments in and for their communities?
How might they be welcomed as cross-sectoral discoursers and publishers alongside their peers in science and social science and health?
So what I think is so important to remember about artists is they have a unique set of knowledge, skills, and ability. There are things that they're really good at that aren't better or worse than the things that a plumber is good at or the things that a banker is good at, but they're complementary to those. My name is Jamie Bennett, and I'm an independent consultant who works with nonprofits, philanthropies, and government at the intersection of arts, culture, and equitable community development.
Jamie Bennett is working alongside Penelope on the design team examining these issues.
Artists can sort of help bring the right brain thinking into partnership with the left brain thinking. One of the examples I often give is in Tacoma Park, Maryland. Dance Exchange is a dance company. A bunch of choreographers, dancers, dance makers actually partnered with the local Department of Transportation to redo New Hampshire Avenue. And artists, I don't think, can necessarily make a better streetscape than traffic engineers can. But I think if artists and traffic engineers come to get together and collaborate on that, together, they can make a better streetscape than either can individually. So the way that the traffic engineers can think through bodies moving through space, automobile bodies, and how quickly, how efficiently you can do that. And choreographers can think about bodies moving through space, human bodies, and think about the quality of that experience. How good is it to move through space? If you're actually bringing both of those ways of thinking, knowing, solving to bear on the same street, it's going to be better than if you only had half of those folks doing it.
Penelope, Jamie, and the rest of their collaborative design team have a twofold mission. First, to bring artists into the conversation surrounding community development investments and think about how the systems might be framed differently. Second, they're looking to uplift three pilot projects as proofs of concept for how artist-led enterprises can benefit the communities they serve. One of these pilot sites is located a little over 2 hours north of New York City, in a town of just over 3,000 called Copaig.
For the past 20 plus years, I've mainly been a sculptor and installation artist, but having kids really kind of transformed, my interests, my life. I've found that I've became less interested in making work for exhibition and much more interested in nature and ecology and our relationship to that. Right now, I'm just really excited by the possibility of serving nature, serving the wild in the process of meeting human needs.
This is Bradley Pitts, the founder of PLACE, which stands for Peoples, Land, Agricultures, Ecologies. His work entails re-envisioning a plot of land he owns as an opportunity to achieve multiple positive outcomes at once.
One practice, as he mentioned, annual crops require tilling and seeding every year. When you do that, you're breaking up the soil structure, the fungal structure, and actually releasing a lot of carbon. But there's a lot of nuts, fruit, even some vegetable leafy greens that are perennial. So there's a lot more nutrition that we could be growing in a perennial regenerative way than most of us are used to in our current diet. That's that piece. Since owning this land upstate, I've been building a relationship with the Mohican Nation, and certainly I want to work towards cultural easements and other things that allow tribal members to access the land if they find that valuable. I do have a Mohican collaborator. She's a seed keeper and homesteader out in Wisconsin on the reservation. Her name's Lucy Bergignon. So that's another element. And then the farm will also contain affordable housing. So that could be farm worker housing. That could be just workforce housing. Affordable housing is obviously an issue all around the country. It's no different in Copaig.
So for those who weren't keeping count, that is regenerative farming, connecting indigenous populations with their homeland, and building affordable workforce housing, all on one location.
Too many of us have been taught that humans can only have a negative impact on the natural world, quote unquote natural world. But many people, mostly in indigenous communities, have very long histories of being actually the keystone species in their ecology. So like, how can we find our way back to that?
Place seeks to achieve a multifaceted mission that's hard to quantify using traditional metrics of success. Financial returns will likely be smaller and take longer to come through than an enterprise that doesn't take the weight of the world on its shoulders. So how should investors think differently about approaching an opportunity like Bradley's?
One thing that it looks like is a serious and radical change of investors' mindsets towards committing themselves to capital that needs to work for a much longer period of time, so that capital is understood to be a type of energy that needs to be more unified. And unification to me means that if you have a dollar and I have $1 million, we're tied together through our common purpose, and your dollar is as valuable as my million in the sense that it ties us together. We're invested for the same time period for the same outcome. And in today's very polarized society here for us in the United States, I think another dimension I would add is there's this really important concept that I think about a lot, and I never know how to say it without it sounding negative, although it's very clear to me what it is, which is you have to be prepared to give something up. That's also very simple, I think. It's like, if we're not really prepared to give something up in order to, and you finish the sentence in any way you like, you know, for our shared equitable future, then as far as I'm concerned, we're lost.
To change someone's thinking is no simple task. To change someone's thinking around a subject as vast and complex as how, where, and for what purpose money flows through society is an even greater challenge.
Active civic participation really requires, I think, a degree of critical thinking and analysis around the immediate things around you, and understanding that in the midst of, you know, individualism, right, and rugged individualism, there's also a neighborhood and a block, you know, and maybe a municipality or a town or a village, and you all have to function together in that regard.
This is Clyde Valentin, a multidisciplinary artist, educator, and cultural producer. His work entails asking, in a society that values art and culture, that benefits from art and culture, why are artists themselves often overlooked as visionaries worthy of investment?
Culture is not foreign to investors and venture capitalists. Like, you know, we've touted the culture at Apple for generations now. It is feels like a thread that I want to keep pulling, you know, for us. And I think it is about sort of the future of this work. Thinking about founders and culture workers and artists in the community cultural context, treating them with the same veracity, you know, and enthusiasm and resources as venture capitalists would treat a founder of a new tech company.
Clyde has witnessed firsthand what initiatives that embrace the arts can do for communities.
I think about organization in the South Side of Brooklyn, Williamsburg, Brooklyn specifically, which is now internationally known. It's a destination. It has some of the high market real estate market values in New York City. This organization was founded in Williamsburg in 1982. It's called El Puente, Puente Center for Peace and Justice. And it was founded by a handful of folks who were interested in very distinct sort of buckets based upon the conditions of the 1980s, early 1980s in New York City, and specifically in the South Side of Williamsburg, which was like rival the Bronx in terms of burnt out buildings, you know, drugs and gang infestations, crime and violence. The organizers of El Puente stepped in and said, well, you know, education's important, art is important. I think about the generations, and I personally have witnessed the generations of people and families that El Puente as a nexus in this formerly distressed community served. They completely changed the trajectory of many individuals and thus families now to a third generation. And I think about what could have happened to a lot of these folks who were maybe, you know, at risk for getting eaten, you know, by the conditions. And I think about the wealth that's produced, you know, by way of stabilizing families, folks moving from, you know, not being able to speak English to be able to speak English, to be able to take on apprenticeships, to be able to become Teamsters and union workers, to be able to afford a large family. And then, you know, have those children all graduate from college who are now like cybersecurity engineers and, you know, lawyers, and entrepreneurs. This is in the span of one generation, all emanating from one organization that focused on distinct elements of what was missing in their community.
The name of the game is ripple effects. In this case, one organization intervening holistically in an area of need, addressing multifaceted problems by offering not only hard skills to community members, but creating avenues for them to connect with one another and express themselves through the arts. The result was enhanced opportunities for generations that followed.
Part of what's missing for us systemically in our society is the value on people and culture.
One of the guiding principles of Jackanoid Paralope, the producing organization behind this podcast, is that art and creativity have healing powers. A 2020 book by Susan Maximin and Ivy Ross titled Your Brain on Art, How the Arts Transforms Us, dives deep into this topic, charting the neurological, physical, and emotional benefits of regular engagement with the arts. They include greater neuroplasticity and emotional regulation, reduced feelings of loneliness, depression, and anxiety, and enhanced overall well-being. These benefits have led an increasing number of healthcare providers, especially in the UK over the past decade, to embrace what's called social prescribing, which basically boils down to a non-medical approach to helping patients feel better. This can mean taking a pottery class, visiting a museum, dancing, singing, humming, really anything that gives time and space to the creative wonder that resides inside all of us. It may not seem intuitive that hitting pause on the results-oriented mindset that drives today's culture would relieve stress instead of exacerbate it, but that's precisely what the numerous case studies in this book have shown.
Where we are in our society as a challenge is to create exceptional, extraordinary lived experiences.
In 2024, Clyde's organization One Nation, One Project produced Arts for Everybody, an 18-city single-day event demonstrating the connection between art and health. A partner on that project was Urban Health Plan in the Bronx, a community health center that serves one of the poorest congressional districts in the country.
I'm Paloma Hernandez. I am the president and CEO of Urban Health Plan, one of the largest community health centers in New York State and probably in the country as well in terms of the number of people that we serve. Our Arts for Everybody programs began as, I would say, as a result of the lack of joy and the lack of motivation, excitement that came with the pandemic. We were down and out. I think society as a whole is down and out. And I had the opportunity to meet with some arts people who had this crazy idea of how you could combine community health centers with the arts. So much of what our patients endure is not really health related, even though it manifests itself through health, but really social conditions. So we see a lot of food insecurity. We see poor housing. We see poor environment, high unemployment. So all those things, right? And I think what the arts and culture do is that they provide people with a sense of hope. This has been traditional, right? You look at poor communities, you look at indigenous people, you look at slaves, you look at all of that through history. And part of what kept us all going, and I know as a Puerto Rican in post-colonial Puerto Rico, a lot of what kept people going was storytelling and dancing and singing and instruments. And I think that that is a way of giving people hope that things will get better.
Urban Health Plan began by directing its patients to engage with cultural institutions
but found out that getting folks to go places can sometimes prove difficult. So they took their approach one step further and simply brought artists and musicians to them, improving patients' experience on-site when they were already there for their appointments.
Health centers, like hospitals, have many walls. There's lots and lots of walls. Now we have two walls filled with wishing jars that were created by the artists in residence working with people that really were just walking by.
As the second of the three pilot sites that Penelope's design team is focusing on, Urban Health Plan is seeking to build on their successes by restoring an old theater down the block, transforming it into an extension of their community health center that offers artistic programming round the clock.
People always went to that theater, and the structure's still there, the marquee is still there, the facade of the theater is still there. And so my hope is that we could take that space and kind of renovate it back to the feel of an old theater, really make it kind of a place where we could refer people and they could engage in activities, and then it becomes a community asset where people right in their communities have a sense of being able to engage in arts and culture.
The act of weaving community together with art and artistic expression is core to the mission of the third and final pilot site, Ash Studios in Dallas, Texas.
I'm Dale Ratcliffe. I'm an artist, poet, writer, cultural organizer, strategist, and one half of Ash Studios.
My name is Fred Villanueva, and I do a lot of different forms of artwork. I'm a firm believer in the power of art to change lives. It certainly made a difference in my life. I probably wouldn't have made it through high school without art.
Ash Studios works with community members to nurture their creative talents and embrace opportunities that might not have otherwise seemed possible.
You know, we began, like most studios do, by hosting open studios and having art parties and networking parties. But out of each one of these events, there was always one or two, you know, individuals who would stick around and maybe be incredibly curious and really want to get involved. So we have a couple of case studies that began as very kind of humble studio training here. And then these individuals went out further into the community, which basically meant that our impact was multiplied.
We've been able to kind of represent a different vision of what art and culture can be and who gets to drive those decisions. Dallas is a majority person of color city, and when we first got started, that wasn't really what the art world looked like. We've worked a lot with the city of Dallas. We've been able to get individual artists funding through the city of Dallas and really kind of light a way for more voices to feel confident in their ability to tell their stories at a civic level.
The next phase of Ash Studios is developing an affordable live workspace for artists that will also benefit the surrounding community.
The long-term vision for Ash Studios is to become a development specifically for arts and community, really to become an artist and community cultural and health incubator.
We are trying to make those things as accessible as possible and really get the type of facilities that our community deserves.
Each of these three pilot sites, Place, Urban Health Plan, and Ash Studios, seeks to tackle an outsized problem by focusing hyper-locally and embracing an artistic mindset. With Place, it's rethinking how humans can live in harmony with the land. With Urban Health Plan, it's how to combat pervasive health problems by infusing everyday life with hope. And with Ash Studios, it's how to uplift a community by building a home for those who speak its voice. The design team's proposal for funding these projects continues the trend of taking the familiar and examining it from a different perspective.
So what I think is really interesting about sort of moving from a loan, which is what a lot of impact investing happens with, philanthropies are happy to make sort of low-cost PRI and MRI loans, is in that situation, the philanthropy decides how much money they want to cost, how much the capital is going to cost, and they decide how long they can be without that money. What is the term that they're going to lend it for? And I've often found that if you're a bag of money in search of a project, you've already started out wrong. that the much better way to do it is to actually start with the project. What is the work that needs to happen? And what is the capital that needs to flow in order for that work to happen? So by switching to a bond, you're actually moving the power into the hands of the people that are moving the project. They're the ones who are saying, this is what my community needs to get done. Here's how much we can afford to pay for the capital, and here's how long we're going to need it. So all of a sudden, you've got the nonprofit, you've got the project in the power position to say, this is what we need. They've set their own terms. And philanthropies and other enlightened lenders are welcome to say yes or no, but they don't get to change the terms of engagement.
So a bond, something that's very familiar to investors, is being thought through and developed by the project owners rather than by the lender. This means that the timeline and terms of repayment can live in harmony with the actual needs of the project, rather than the project leaders having to map their efforts to satisfy the requirements of the lender. In other words, the mission for each of these projects gets to drive the bus.
Particularly in the realm of artistic-led efforts, including creative placemaking, we haven't considered it over enough time. You know, and you're fortunate if you can be funded for a 3-year initiative or a 5-year initiative, and that's not enough time. The way I used to think about this a lot would be if everyone in this room of funders could shift just this much, you know, that's actually a lot. I have that picture in my mind all the time, which is that literally it's a picture of people looking this way and then everybody turns, you know, just, oh my God, look what's over here. And so it's a little bit about the familiar acting in ways in which it even surprises itself.
There's another bit of innovation baked into these projects and the efforts to get them funded. And it goes back to that initiative we talked about earlier, Making Missing Markets. Place, Urban Health Plan, and Ash Studios are each seeking to address problems that exist now. The work they're seeking to accomplish will ideally reduce the impact of those problems over time for the communities that they serve. Less money would need to be spent addressing those problems if these projects prove successful, and new opportunities will emerge. Ergo, can the organizations and institutions and individual investors, all the stakeholders who stand to benefit in the long run, can those folks be brought on upfront as co-investors to help make this work possible?
What I think is additionally interesting about these three projects is also how they're going to repay the bonds. So in upstate New York, Bradley Pitts is an artist who's thinking about what are some of the changes that they need to make to their agricultural practices and to how they're doing land stewardship. Those changes that they're going to make are actually going to mitigate future climate disasters, right? They're going to mitigate future flooding. They're going to mitigate future droughts. So all of a sudden, those communities will need to spend fewer emergency relief funds. So that savings is what's actually going to be able to repay the bond that will allow Bradley and his colleagues to make those changes now. In the Bronx, Urban Health Plans is one of the largest federally qualified health centers in New York State, and they're really interested in a set of arts and culture investments. They want to repurpose a theater and activate it as part of their community's wellness plan. And they now have the empirical evidence, the peer-reviewed, published in the World Health Organization Journal evidence, that those interventions will result in future healthcare savings, right? We're going to need to spend less money on medicine. We're going to spend less money on clinical therapies in the future because the folks are weller longer. And so those future healthcare savings are going to be able to be applied to repay the bond. There was some work that happened around the original passage of the Affordable Care Act that created an opportunity for healthcare systems to make place-based investments and do that kind of repayment method. And in Dallas, there's a really beautiful play that's going to result in community ownership, a set of artists that are currently using a set of properties as live workspaces are going to be able to own those spaces and begin to create their own generational wealth. And they're going to do that through this bond play that will be repaid in the same way that a traditional mortgage would be. So little bits of money every month, that's how that bond is going to get repaid.
Co-investment for a shared purpose.
We're invested for the same time period, for the same outcome.
This episode, we heard from a small team of artists that are thinking differently. They're thinking about community, they're thinking holistically, they're saying capital can work better across people, across communities. And they're saying that artists are untapped resources. One of the quotes I always come back to is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If nothing else, artists are not afraid to experiment. Where most people get stuck, artists get creative. And if we're looking at artist-led systems, it stands to reason that something new might just unlock potential where it has not been found before. That's what these artists are trying to do. Using creativity to unlock new possibility. And so the big question that this podcast asks is, why not try? For listeners who want to learn more about these projects and the overall efforts of artists acting as leaders and designers for systems change and community well-being, there's more episodes in this season that will dive into the full interviews with each of the folks you heard from. And information can be found at the Culture Bank website. That's Culture Bank with a Q at the end, linked in the show notes for this episode. If you're hungry for more stories that seek to bring people together, investigate seeming paradoxes, and dwell at the intersection of creativity, community, and social good, consider becoming a Paralopian subscriber by rating this show and checking out our other shows at jackanoidparalope.com.